All right, buddy. We're back. So just to clarify, I don't know if there was some confusion out there, but we put out our latest episode, which was supposed to be our episode 4, but it was technically episode 3 because we lost the audio on the first Breakthrough debut album's episode. So yeah, it might, you know, explain to people.
You guys following that out there? Okay, so it was episode 3, which was supposed to be a two-parter. Part 1 of episode 3. I'm confusing myself at this point. Debut albums? Was this the thing?
Yeah, so it was...
Volume was all kapakai.
We recorded our first debut albums. We had talk about, you know... I don't want to mention the albums.
Yeah, we can't talk about it because about it.
The last episode that we started with Warren G was technically the part 2. But just the audio got screwed up and we just couldn't release it.
Yes, so we're doing part 1 of the two-parter that was episode 3. God, did I get that right?
I guess.
Oh, shit. But, all right.
I don't know if anybody would really care.
Nobody gives a damn.
They just want to hear
this song.
Old school music, but... Yeah. But,
Okay, here we go.
We're going to go in. This is part 2, which is part 1, but... I don't know. We're going to go down a rabbit hole of what we're going to call this thing.
This sounds like some episode of... What was it? Saw or something. make a choice. All right, let's go with it. There we go.
But...
Hip hop, let's go, hooray.
We're going to go debut albums and September 20th of 1994 on Jive Records, we had the debut album of Mr. Keith Murray.
Hey, all right, there you go. Keith Murray.
The Long Island rapper, right? Part of the Def Squad. He's originally went by the name Keefy Keef. Thank God.
Oh, God.
There's a lot of jokes there.
I'm not even going to touch that one. That's too easy.
And he actually released a single as Keefy Keef.
Wonderful.
In the early 90s.
Wonderful.
And he was affiliated and was produced by Long Island rap group JVC Crew. Do you remember JVC Crew?
JVC, that's a speaker. So yes. It's JBL's. Sorry,
I think
JBL's.
JVC is like a VCR, right?
Was it?
I think so.
Shout out to people buying 80s and 90s electronics. I do not remember them. I do not. JVC?
And then he went by another name, which was MC Do Damage. God, he wasn't great on picking names here.
Stick to what you got, your real name. Jesus.
But,
gosh, I did not know that either.
But this is, 94 would become a thing of when rappers would be renaming themselves by their real names. I mean. I mean, it wasn't that common prior.
It wasn't that common, and he was one of the first. I don't remember many guys having the real name.
It's like him and Craig Mack, right? Were
right.
Like the original guys.
They were the original guys, yes. I don't remember people before that. Not many.
And even though, you know, he made an appearance on this, like, obscure rapper Mark D's song All in a Day's Work in 1990,
yeah,
no one heard of Keith Murray until he rebranded himself and was on Hostile.
Exactly,
from
yes.
Eric Sermon's 1993 No Pressure album.
Exactly.
So, what did you think of Keith Murray when you first heard him on Hostile? Were you into him? Did you dig him? He was much hyped at this time.
He was. He came from that Hostile song.
Right.
With Eric Sermon, from the Eric Sermon solo album, which was probably one of the best songs of that album, the Eric Sermon Pressure album. So, there was a little bit of a buzz. He sounded different. It sounded good with the Eric Sermon beat. The buzz was there.
Yeah, I remember him getting like written up in The Source and getting written up in rap pages and stuff.
Right.
And people were kind of hyped up for him. He had a unique style, right? He had that kind of multi-syllabic rhyming style. He definitely was looking at the Thesaurus a lot, right? This guy.
Right.
Using a lot of big words.
You know, for a guy that can't come up with a name for him.
That's a great point.
He knows the Thesaurus well. He knows the Thesaurus well. Go figure.
That's a great point.
I mean, how the hell?
This was the debut album, The Most Beautifulest Thing in the World. Keith recorded this when he was 20 years old. The entire album was produced by Eric Sermon.
Smart.
And he had two hit singles that actually charted on Billboard's top 10 from this album.
Billboard's top 10?
Rap charts, excuse me.
Yeah, please clarify.
Rap charts.
Okay.
Rap charts.
There ain't no top 10 for Keith Murray. All right, so it was Get Lifted and Get Most Lifted Beautiful Thing, right?
Most Beautiful All right. Thing. And it was the Get Lifted remix that we're playing right now, not the original record version.
Right. So this is the song that got a lot of play, the remix. But, this remix.
I don't know if you remember, but Keith at that time was like really hyped up. I mean, he was considered the new star MC coming out of the East Coast, like a solo MC, featured on like Mary J. Blige remix, Total remix, R. Kelly worked with him.
He was the it guy for the R&B remixes. Yes.
Yeah.
He was in a lot of them.
And then that was in the 90s too, when Coca-Cola started doing hip-hop campaigns.
Yeah.
And you remember like Keith Murray had like a 95 Coca-Cola commercial.
Right. Right.
I mean, so like that's kind of big. Like,
there was like a Grand Poobah was in. Did Grand Poobah
had like
one?
A bunch.
Pete Rock and CeeLo Smooth had one.
They did like a whole series. It was Coke and Sprite.
Yeah, like, that's right.
Sprite actually took the ball and ran with more of the hip hop. This is the hip hop soda.
Right.
But Coke at the time was trying to do these hip hop commercials.
They're like black and white commercials.
Right.
Yeah, I remember that. That's right.
And I think like Keith was just doing like a voiceover on it, and he's like, "Our generation, you know, you can't, you know."
Oh, okay, okay. He wasn't on there.
I think it was just his voice.
Poobah was on there. Poobah,
I think, was on.
Was
there.
Was on there. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. Well, he had a very long career. He had a lot of. He was known as the guy that would always have songs with another R&B singer.
He had a longer career than a lot of guys anticipated him, right?
He was hanging in there till into the 2000s. I mean, a lot of people still know him from the Home Alone song with R. Kelly.
Yeah.
So that was a big hit. That was a club hit that people may not know that was Keith Murray. The longevity was there.
For sure.
It was there. I mean, of course, early 2000s to mid 2000s, a lot of these guys, then that's when the time would be done. But still, for him to last, you got to give him credit.
Yeah.
So.
You know, and then basically, the album would receive 4 mics in The Source.
Yeah.
Is this an album that you listened to at the time and revisited or never went back to? Or
this album.
What do you think the Keith Murray legacy is? Like, is he just, you consider him only like this kind of guy that his music lives on only in this small pocket of time?
That's a good question. If I got to look at it, you can't talk about 94, 95, even 96 without Keith Murray in the conversation.
I like it, yeah.
But after that, it gets very diluted to mention Keith Murray.
It took him to 99 to release It's a Beautiful Thing. That's the follow-up. That's the one he did with, like, he had a song with, like, LL Cool J.
Oh, okay, right. Remember that one? Right.
And then he released that He's Keith Murray album in 2003. That's the one where he has got that red jacket on the front with the cap. It kind of looks like an action figure kind of.
That's great. I don't remember that at all. So if we go back to him, I went. Oh, okay, that. I did not buy that album. You just showed me the cover. I don't remember that at all.
He had like songs with like Jamie Foxx and.
I do not remember that at all.
Yeah.
But. I okay, getting back to Keith, okay, historically, for the 90s, yes. Should he be in a Hall of Fame of some sort? I'm going to say yes, just sneaking in. The album back then, I give it 3.5. Now, would I listen to it now? No.
Just the singles, or certain singles.
I would rather, the only song that I would like from Keith Murray that I would listen to in the car that's not even on this album is The Rhyme with the Slum Village remix. The JD remix. The Rhyme Slum Village remix. That's from like 95.
Yeah.
96.
No, I think that was from like later.
96, 97. The Rhyme.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was 96, 97. I'll listen to that, the J Dilla remix of The Rhyme. That would be the only one I would listen to in the car. This.
Yeah, this was like 95, 96, this album. This is the Enigma album,
I will listen to this.
Okay, my mistake. His next album didn't come out in 99. It came out in like 96.
Enigma.
Yeah, right. Enigma.
So as far as 94 goes, no. Most Beautiful Thing in the World, it's whatever. It's okay. It's fine. I know the historic value.
Right.
Get Lifted is fine for the time. Maybe Get Lifted I'll listen to more so. The Rhyme, Get Lifted. That'd be my top two Keith Murray songs I'll listen to in my life.
Okay.
For the rest of my life.
I agree. I think Keith Murray at the time, I was about 3.5 mics on the album. You know, His lyrics are enjoyable.
Yeah.
I felt like Eric Sermon's production still hadn't really hit its heights yet.
Not yet.
It was kind of a little bit monotonous.
Yeah.
The production.
Yes.
But Eric got a lot better. Once he moved to Atlanta, Eric Sermon's production got a lot better.
Right.
He was, you know, doing like the music album and the Def Squad stuff, and
he had some hits.
That was definitely the growth for him.
Yes.
All right. Moving on to another album. Classic one. It's Outkast. Southern Playalistic Cadillac Music, released on April 26, 1994 on LaFace Records. It's the debut of iconic Atlantic duo Andre Benjamin, Andre 3000, and Andre Big Boy Patton, who were only 17 and 18 when they recorded this album.
Right.
That's crazy. The lyrical content, I would argue that these guys were the best teenage rappers of all time.
Oh, clearly.
And Tribe started at that age, but these guys were, I argue, even better than Tribe when Tribe started, lyrically.
Well, for the fact that nobody knew much about them, there wasn't no build-up to, there weren't part of any kind of native tongues or anything. There were these guys that came out on a Christmas album.
Yeah.
And blew everybody's mind.
Yeah.
And they had many different styles. They're from the South. Nobody could figure out what they were all about. They had all these different ways to go with it musically. Blew everybody away.
I think the key with Outkast is that, yeah, the South really didn't have a voice, you know, besides rap a lot and stuff. And Atlanta was like booty bass music at the time. And you had Miami bass music at the time. So these guys were listening to Tribe, but they were also listening to The Chronic.
Yes.
And they somehow infused this lyrical East Coast thing by listening to De La and Tribe. And they always talked about being fans of them. And then interfusing this funk music that was kind of coming out of the West. And they really created this unique sound.
Entirely unique sound. Nothing's ever been heard from before like this. Yeah. And it's amazing.
I mean, these guys met in a mall. It was like they were going to high school in 92. They were cafeteria battle rappers. And they kind of formed a mutual admiration of each other's style when they battled. And they were originally called the Misfits. But then changed their name to Outkast when they found out the punk band was
exactly the right.
Misfits.
Right.
And they were discovered by production group Organized Noise, Rico Wade, Sleepy Brown,
Legendary,
Ray Murray, Legendary Production Group. Do not get their credit.
Not at all.
Get the credit that they're due for shaping the sound of the South. Organized Noise, Pimp C, these are guys that, you know, Pimp C is held in much higher regard as far as shaping the South sound, but Organized Noise should be right there because this album is the blueprint of what would become Evolve, the Southern sound that we know.
Exactly right.
Right. With these guitars, these funky guitars and these bass lines and...
Exactly.
You know,
unique to... You just never know.
Right. Do you remember what Outkast's first appearance was? It was on a remix for a R&B group.
Oh. Really?
Yeah.
Female.
Chicks, yep.
Escape.
Oh,
TLC.
Oh, TLC. It was TLC. Because they were LaFace Records tie-in, right?
So right.
They were actually featured on the What About Your Friends remix.
That's right.
And then L.A. Reid liked their verse, signed them to LaFace.
That's right.
And then got them to record Players Ball and kind of sprung it on him. He was like, hey, we need a Christmas song. We'll put you on a Christmas album.
That's right.
And the dilemma for these 17, 18-year-olds, how are we going to make a Christmas song cool? Because that was not cool.
Not cool at all.
Right.
But they got it figured out. I mean, they clearly...
They nailed it.
I mean, is that the best Christmas song, hip-hop-wise, of all time?
I mean, what else do we got? We got freaking Christmas in Hollis.
Yeah.
Do we have another Christmas song that's actually good? This is the greatest
Christmas
song.
Didn't Curtis Blow do like a Christmas song?
Yeah, Christmas Rapping.
See, right? He does all seasonal things, right? No, he did Basketball.
Yeah.
This is the best Christmas song. This is by far the best Christmas song.
I agree. But yeah, this was featured on the LaFace Christmas album in 93. This hit number one on Billboard rap charts and actually cracked even the pop charts as well. This single was everywhere.
Yes.
And
this was everywhere.
And then the success of this song basically propelled them to record the album, and they gave them $15,000, which was relatively small for an album budget
The
day.
Correct.
Right? These guys were like... Some big artists were getting hundreds of thousands of dollars for albums. Rap was still getting a little bit of a short shaft.
Very much so.
But impressive the sound quality they got for $15,000 on this, right?
Right.
Like, I was very, really impressed with the production budget of that. But they also said that they saved a lot of money because they recorded it in Rico Wade's basement. When they found out the thing, they're like, we're not going to rent a studio. We're going to do it in his basement.
Exactly.
Save the money. We can buy weed. We can buy food.
That's how it works. They were broke. It's grassroots.
I think Mobb Deep had that same kind of story.
It's grassroots style, exactly.
The Infamous. But
exactly.
But, you know, they're mixing Southern culture and slang, conscious themes, you know, tales of pimps, hustlers, weed.
Yeah.
I mean, it is this is like the Chronic of the South.
By far.
Yes.
Yes. This is Automatic 5 mic album.
Yep. Longevity, I think it's still 5 or 4.5 at least.
Yeah,
you could do maybe without the skits.
Well, okay, so when it comes to an album like this, that is like so phenomenal and historically phenomenal, you don't really need to talk about it much because it stands alone. We don't need to sell it. We don't need to kind of go into it and delve into it further. This is 5 mics then. This is 5 mics now. Historically, it's 5 mics. There is nothing that's not 5 mics about this album.
Yeah. There's not a bad song.
Right. And if you haven't heard this album before, anyone out there, definitely do. Yeah. Outkast has a lot of fans.
Yeah.
And a lot of them don't know this album.
No.
So
A lot of fans started from, like, Stankonia. They started from the Miss Jackson era.
They started from Hey Ya.
They started from that. Which is, they're not even together on that album. It's like a completely separate album.
They like Hey Ya. They like So Fresh and So Clean.
Yeah, the Way You Move.
The Way You Move. What was it? What was another like top
hit? Like
Miss Jackson,
they like Stankonia, like the Bombs Over Baghdad.
Miss Jackson, Fresh and So Clean. That's the Outkast people know. They don't know this album, so.
I would highly recommend for you Outkast fans that have not listened to their early stuff. I argue that this and Aquemini are my two favorite Outkast albums.
That's another great album.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's another one.
It's for these guys to have so many classic albums. I mean, that's why they're always in the conversation, and that's why, I mean, they made it pretty far with our tournament, our hip hop tournament.
I was just gonna mention that. Yeah. I thought Outkast was gonna win the tournament.
Yeah, you had called it early.
I predicted Outkast.
I think they're gonna win.
But because that's how strong these guys are. That's how historic these guys are. Yeah. I would take them in a vote over Tribe Called Quest because of the mainstream name recognition that Outkast has.
Yeah.
But it's a legit name recognition because they are quality musicians. Yeah. So it's not just because of it's a name. No, I would still defend that Outkast could be better than Tribe Called Quest.
There's definitely an argument there.
Yeah,
there's definitely an argument.
It wouldn't be a cheap win.
No,
if Outkast won.
It's not an easy knockout.
Right.
Yeah. I agree.
So,
did you remember picking up like the singles, or did you just buy the album? Because there was like a rare Wax Diamond D remix.
Yeah, that I have. Yeah,
that one?
I have.
That's
that.
A rare one.
But yeah, I got all the singles.
Nice.
Once again, Sam Goody, and then the vinyl came out. The Christmas album I have, La Face Christmas.
Nice.
That was pretty much it. There was the singles, Players Ball.
Right.
Yeah, the Players Ball extended version.
Get Up, Get Out.
That was Southern Playlistic was a single as well.
Yeah.
Diamond D. That was it. Yeah, they're all good. Everything's good.
And then, there were like mixtape songs that were circulating. A lot of people playing Hootie Who, Crumbling Herb.
Yeah.
Right. So.
So a lot of people love the song Crumbling Herb.
Right.
I remember Source Magazine saying that the best song on the album was Crumbling Herb.
Yeah, the Source gave the album 4.5 mics.
Yeah.
I think in retrospect they probably would have gave it 5.
Yeah.
But yeah, 4.5 mics.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely well deserved. All right, moving on to another duo from New Jersey.
Okay. All right. I'm feeling good right now, so let's
artifacts.
Just see. Hey, all right. Okay, so this is an interesting one to bring up because if you mention Artifacts to someone, that's a hip-hop guy, of course.
Most people never heard of the Artifacts.
They coming into this album, they never heard of them, right? But there was a song that came out before this that was it was a party song. It was Nubian Crackers.
It was Nubian Crackers. You beat me to it.
So the Booyaka Booyaka song, all you hip-hop weirdos out there, I know you guys know that song. This one. This was Tame One, El Sensei.
This was the first appearance of Artifacts on Wax. And Nubian Crackers were a white group that Brand Nubian signed.
Yep. Thus the Crackers. You got it, everybody? Some people didn't get it, you know. People thought, like, Nubian crackers is just like some kind of a food reference. No. What do you call a white guy?
Guys that were new, that were down with
Yes,
Vanubian.
What do you call a white guy, people? Come on. Not honky.
But yeah, this was a I only had the cassette single of this.
Oh yeah.
This was a hard to find song.
This is a hard to find song.
Do you have this on wax?
Yes.
Wow.
I would play this out. You could get away with this like back in like 99, 98.
And this had that classic beat. This was produced by T-Ray.
Yeah, there's a T-Ray beat.
T-Ray beat. And T-Ray had that same because you can T-Ray did stuff for Cypress Hill.
Right.
And he always had this rolling bass line, right? This kind of rolling.
So you hear the rolling bass line now. You hear that drum? That's the T-Ray drum.
Yeah, that is the T-Ray drum.
A lot of his songs have that drum. But yeah, this was a good song as far as a party song. It wasn't legendary, but it worked. And then from there, the ads came out for the artifacts as far as the graffiti magazine ads were graffiti, pushing the graffiti. And then when Wrong Side of the Tracks came out, they had a great album cover.
Oh, yeah.
With those graffiti of them, of their name.
Yeah, because these guys were all-encompassing about the culture.
Right.
I mean, they were rappers, they were DJs, they were graffiti artists.
Right.
I mean, they were the complete package as far as they were truly about the culture.
Right. So the marketing was good to get you interested in a group you never heard of.
Yeah.
And it worked.
The album was called Between a Rock and a Hard Place.
Yeah.
It was released October 25th, 1994 on Big Beat Atlantic Records.
Yeah.
And it was, Elda Sensei, Tame One, and their DJ, I don't remember him, DJ Chaos.
Oh,
DJ Chaos.
That's right.
And they were originally known as the Brick City Kids.
Yes.
And then change their names to Artifacts.
They would revert to the Brick City Kids again when they were
when they rebranded.
Yeah. But Wrong Side of the Tracks was a great single.
Killer.
And the B-side was Flexi with the Tech.
Yeah, Flexi with the Tech.
Both were great songs and were unique at the time. And it caught everybody off guard. Great songs. The second single was Come On With The Get Down.
Yeah, Come On With The Get Down. And then they did a great remix with Busta Rhymes.
Yeah.
But the story between great them remix. Was after meeting Sadat X and Lord Jamaro at a post-Grand Puba show, basically. This was during the Punk's Jump Up era. They basically took Artifacts under their wing. Brand Nubian got him studio time.
Yeah.
And then Artifacts did an infamous call-in freestyle to Stretch and Bobbito. And they were actually then featured on the April 93 issue of The Source for Unsigned Hype. They were another Unsigned Hype.
Oh, got it. Okay.
So that hype from the Unsigned Hype got them on the attention of Reef. I don't know if you remember this guy, Reef. His name was, he was like the A&R guy. So all on all the Big Beat Atlantic Records, he was always executive producer.
I remember seeing that name in the liner notes.
Yeah.
It's just not Keith Murray's name?
Queefy Reef.
Queefy Reef. All right.
And then Artifacts were signed to the label. And then they did the Nubian Crackers song.
Yeah.
Right? And then
okay.
They kind of put their album into production, and they hooked them up with Buckwild from the Digging in the Crates. So he did a bunch of these songs for the album. He produced quite a bit of the album.
And Buckwild at that point, that was peak Buckwild. 94-95 was peak Buckwild.
Yeah, it was.
He went downhill fast.
It was Buckwild and T-Ray.
Yeah, T-Ray as well.
That handled like a lot of the joints on here.
So they had a video for this song that was played a lot. They did not play Wrong Side of the Tracks on MTV for some kind of a restriction. I'm not sure why. I don't know if they had like a gun in it or something. But Wrong Side of the Tracks was not played on MTV. But Come On With The Get Down was. This is the remix.
These guys got more play on mixtapes and buzz and stuff, but they didn't get a lot of video love.
It wasn't the video stuff. This was a great remix with Busta Rhymes.
Which is a bummer because this was a visual group because they had all the graffiti.
You would think.
So
maybe it was illegal to show graffiti. I don't know. But there was this song. It was also Who Am I? Who I Am.
Yeah, Who I Am. I remember that single. So they also came out they had that song with Redman. Do you remember that? Coming Through Your Block. Because Redman was like the New Jersey MC ambassador, right?
Yeah. So, okay. That was on the album, right?
Yeah.
That wasn't a single.
That wasn't a single, but it was kind of getting passed around in like mixtapes, and DJs were kind of putting it on mixtapes.
And that song was fine, because that song, when the album was about to come out, the radio stations would play some of the album cuts, Coming Soon, and that was one. So like, wow, this could be a great album. I didn't think this was a great album. I really didn't think this was a great album.
Okay.
It lacked, it had a lot of filler. Like, this song was great. Wrong Side of the Tracks was great. coming through your block, come on with your get down.
And then the remixes
were good.
Dynamite Soul remix, come on with the get down remix.
Yeah, Dynamite Soul, the album version was okay. And then you had that one, What's Up Now?
Yeah.
It was okay, but it wasn't great. I just never found it amazing. I was expecting it to be better.
So do you feel like their second album, the That's Them album, was better or worse?
That was worse. They don't make good albums.
So you feel like these guys just never reached their potential?
They never reached their potential. No, not at all.
Because they have lyrical ability. We're not going to deny them that.
I bought their albums. I like them. I like the entire package,
right.
But not as a full album. Like, we just came off of Outkast right now, and this is not anywhere near remotely of that. And I'm not saying that as an insult to them. It's just they couldn't put it together. The remixes seems like they figured it out. When the album was put out, it seemed like they weren't figuring it out yet. But then they realized, hey, let's try some other stuff again. Let's try this again. And that's when you got the remixes.
The Source gave the album 4 mics, surprisingly.
That's amazing.
They were digging it.
That's amazing.
They were digging it.
I think they were digging it based off the impact of Wrong Side of the Tracks, yeah. Come On With the Get Down, Red Man Song. But that's not an album. There's 12 songs on this album, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay,
yeah.
let's
skits.
With so skits? Okay.
14 songs, I think 2 skits. All
right. Okay, let's pull up this album right now. Okay, because this needs to be
done. Yeah, I would
say
I'm only going back to maybe half the album, just looking at it right now.
Okay, Come On With the Get Down. Okay, good song. I'll give that a 4 mic song. Wrong Side of the Tracks, I give that 4.5 mics. Heavy Ammunition, 3 mics. Attack of New Jerusalem, I barely remember that one. That's 2 mics. Naughty Headed Ingas, no, 2 mics. That was like it started with that chorus.
Right.
Okay, and then Way Back, yet another Back in the Day song. Everybody,
Way Back.
Everybody wants to talk about Back in the Day. No, and that was when they used the sample, the Just Ice, right?
Right,
Way Back.
Right. That's right.
Why do I
you
know
remember
that?
It had to make an impression on you if you're remembering the
they
sample.
They played it a lot. They played it like Wake Up Show and All's played that song a lot. Because everybody likes to go way back. They like to go back in the day. Flexing with the Tech was a good song. Coming Through Your Block was a good song. Lower the Boom was the weed song, right?
Lower the Boom was the weed
that
song.
That was played a lot on the radio, strangely. On college radio and like the hip-hop shows. That had a great song. I give that a 3.5 song. 3.5 mics. What Goes On was trash. I know what's going on at the point of this album. It's time that this album shuts down. Dynamite Soul, the original version, I give it 3 mics.
Yeah.
What's Up Now, I'll give it 3 mics. Coming Through Your Block, there's another version of Coming Through Your Block on the iTunes version here.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
I think they actually misprinted it. It says Coming Through Your Block remix, but it's actually the Come On With the Get Down remix.
Okay.
Someone just screwed up.
All right, so if we look at that, those songs, I can't give this 4 mics. I give it 3.5.
I'd say 3.5 then,
yeah,
and then maybe 3 now.
Maybe 3 now.
As far as, because you're only going to play the singles, really.
Yeah, I mean, I might play, if I had to play one album cut of this album, I'll play
Wrong Side for me.
Which one?
Wrong Side of the Tracks.
Oh no, but an album cut. That was a single. Like a song that did not come out as a single. I'd play Lower the Boom.
Yeah.
Lower the Boom would be the only song I would play in the car and feel okay.
And feel okay
and
with
feel
yourself.
Okay. Yeah, I'd be all right. I'd nod my head. I'd be like, all right, I'm all right. I'll smile.
And then Elda Sensei and Tame One both had like solo careers, but never really.
It never took off.
Exploded.
Elda Sensei kind of had a little run. In the independent scene, 2000, 99, 98. They were on Ruckus.
Right, they're on Ruckus.
That was about it.
But I think, I still feel like there are some hip-hop fans that consider this kind of a classic album. Definitely New Jersey heads.
I don't doubt it, yeah.
Because they were one of the breakthrough groups.
I wouldn't put this in my top 10. I wouldn't put this in my top 20.
Yeah, I
top 50. It. It's not, it's good. They're a good group. It's just this... It could have been a lot better. It could have been monumental.
Then going from that duo, which, you know, you obviously have your opinions on, and there's another group that you have your opinions on. It's M.O.P., Mash Out Posse.
All right.
This is the debut album, To the Death. This was released April 5th, 1994, on Select Street Records. Remember Select Street?
Yes.
Chubb Rock was on that, right?
Where albums go to die. It's like them and like Island Records.
island music.
Yeah,
island.
G Street island music. Yeah. Little like color, rainbow color.
Right. Thing on PM Dawn is like waving at you from the window. Okay. I guess how should I put this? People like M.O.P. I get it. But yeah. Do you really like M.O.P.? Are you really a truly enjoyable listening person to... Are you enjoying, is what I'm trying to say, M.O.P. in the car?
Well, are you enjoying... Can you listen to an entire M.O.P. album straight, top to bottom?
No,
soup,
I cannot.
Soup to nuts.
Incorrect, sir. Back then, they got hyped big time. New Run DMC, I think is what they call them. The next Run DMC, the next level Run DMC. No. No, it's them.
I never
yelling.
Heard that comparison.
There was.
I remember being them getting compared to Onyx.
Well, clearly there's the Onyx, right. But they were saying like this is the next level duo that's gonna take New York and take them to the promised land.
Yeah, I mean they're from Brownsville. They were the first big artist that was repping Brownsville that I can remember. Right, East Brooklyn.
I mean, and I get the shtick. I get like they're talking real talk. It's they're yelling, they're tough. Sounding like Onyx. I'm thinking they sounded like Onyx for marketing because Onyx was hot.
Right.
I'm pretty sure there was a meeting where they told M.O.P., you see what they're doing? Can you do it? Do it then. I'm pretty sure. But it's just... The remixes are the things that save these guys. If it wasn't for DJ Premier loving them...
Yeah.
What DJ do Premier, you have?
Huge fan. Huge
and
he, fan of
and it... was justifiable because he made great remixes for them, which we remember.
Well,
and after that...
This was the lead-off single, though.
Right.
Right.
And I did not like it. I get what they're trying to do. I bought it at Sam Goody.
Right.
This is better than that. This song is way better than How About Some
Well, Micro. The Rugged Never Smooth DJ Premier remix was very hard to find.
Right.
It was very hard to find. It was only on the maxi single in the wax.
Right.
But let's give a little bit of background then. Do you remember the guy's name? So it was Lil Fame and...
Lil Fame. He was the more known one. Right. And then...
Billy Danzini.
Yes.
Billy Danzini.
Yes.
So the Mashout Posse. Yeah. They grew up on the same block. They knew each other since they were kids.
Yeah.
And the Mashout Posse was basically their group, their gang of friends that used to hang out in their Brownsville neighborhood. And then Lil Fame, you were right. Lil Fame actually got a little bit of buzz first because he was featured on that East Coast hip hop compilation album called The Hill That's Real.
Right.
It was on 4th and Broadway Records. I don't know, only probably old school heads that were really going to Jelly's and Tower. I would always see a copy of that in the used CD bin. The Hill That's Real.
I want to... Personally, just say, I don't think there's less than three people on this island that have
even heard of that thing.
That's even heard of it.
So two of us are
two
here.
Two of us are right here.
One out there.
There's one out there.
We got to kill them because it'd be the Highlander.
Yeah, there's
gonna
exactly.
Be only one.
There's only one that's going to know this album. Wherever you may stand. So this is a way better song. See, because it's a Premiere production.
Right.
Premiere production changes a person's career. J.Ru, Group Home. M.O.P.
Right.
It's inevitable. It's inevitable. You they just didn't have it. They didn't have the production. They
well,
didn't
that,
have...
How About Some Hardcore? It was really hyped. I mean, the source was like that was the single to get.
Yeah.
In 94, and then it came out, and I couldn't find the single anywhere.
Yeah.
And the only album it was on was the House Party 3 soundtrack.
That is correct. Yes.
And because that was on Select Street Records, where soundtracks go to die.
Soundtracks go to die.
And then,
House Party.
But How About Some Hardcore was the first ever song they ever recorded together.
Oh, okay.
And so it has a raw kind of feel. It's you
I
know,
get it.
It doesn't have
it's
the polish
fine.
Of Premiere, right? So
I get it. It's raw. I get it. They're rugged and raw.
It was
rugged, never
by
smooth.
DR, period, who also went on to work with Smooth the Hustler,
right,
Trigger the Gambler,
right.
Shaheem.
And they came out with albums before. They've had a strange. I won't say strange, but they had a longevity to them.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody knows them for Annie Up.
Yeah.
I think if you were to survey the people, to name five M.O.P. songs, they're not going to be able to do it. They're going to know Annie Up, and then that'll
be it.
I think that'll
be tough.
And that'll be it. And then I remember they had the one...
remember Cold as Ice, the Foreigner single. They had the...
They don't... They're not...
Oh, no? No one's going to remember that?
No one's going to remember that. Are you kidding? Is that a trick question? Okay. But they're going to remember maybe... In the late 90s, they had Handle Your Business.
Right.
That was a remix, right, for that?
Right.
Was that a Premiere
exactly.
remix?
Yeah.
Let's play that. Play that song. Fuck 94. Fuck 94 and shit.
Before we completely bypass this
can
album,
we just listen to
not,
music?
You were
at
not
this
a
point?
Fan. You were not a fan of this album.
It was overrated. It was right. I mean, come on. I mean, I get the imagery. I get, like, toughness. I get the whole New York thing trying to make a comeback right now. I get it. I get it. But it's not, they're not legendary guys. This
they're,
is like
they're
another
New York legends.
They're let's, New York legends, like the Artifacts are New Jersey legends. It's the same situation. It's not legendary. Will MOP go into the Hall of Fame? Okay, I'll go yeah, because of the notoriety of their name, and because of Annie Up, and because everybody knows that these are the yelling guys. Play Handle Your Business. Can we have? Do you have that? And I'll tell you why I wanted to hear Handle Your Business. I'll give you a story on Handle Your Business on this, because I'm not gonna remember this story when we talk about '97 or whenever the hell this album that Handle Your Business came out. So I might as well mention this now. Do we have it? The premiere remix? It's going to tie in very nicely if this is the remix. Was this? Yeah, this is it. Okay. So, here's a backstory in this song. At Borders White Kelly, there was a DJ battle. And an entrant at the DJ battle juggled this song. You want to guess who the name of the guy was?
You.
No. Thank you. I'm flattered. DJ Lagerwoods.
Oh, wow.
Rondo.
Shout out, DJ Lagerwoods.
Started his set with this, and then he juggled the beginning of, ow!
Yeah.
And he did that, and it was right when that song, In Handle Your Business, just came out, so I didn't know it yet. So like, oh, what this fucker playing? Oh, it's not MOP. Oh, that's the one. Well, premiere. Handle Your Business. So I always, whenever I hear this song, I think of you, Rondo. If you're listening to this right now, which you probably are, yeah. And I like it. I think this is better than How About Some Hardcore? I think this song is better. It's Premier Beats. I mean, you can't go wrong. You can't go
Premier
wrong.
Premier really, yeah. Premier champion,
for the most part.
Champion these guys.
For the well, yeah, Premier Beats for the most part, you can't go wrong. But he championed these guys.
But at least MOP made the smart move of leaving Select Street Records.
Well, that's why they didn't die.
They went to Relativity.
Yeah.
You know. And you know, it's a this is at least you can say this is a short album.
Yeah.
The To the Death album only had 10 tracks.
Okay, let's, you know what?
There was like Top MOP. Of the Line, To the Death, Heist Masters. And Heist Masters, that original song, I don't know if you remember, that was where they got the Annie Up theme from. They were actually chanting Annie Up on that song.
Oh, right. That I remember. Strangely, I remember that. Okay, look at this album. Rugged Never Smooth album version? No. Ring Ding? I have no idea what that sounds like. Heist Masters? No. Blue Steel? Who is MOP? To the Death?
I think there's like 4 skits.
Which song is this?
This is To the Death.
This is
this
To the Death.
This is the title track.
Okay.
I'd say the production is it's rough. It doesn't quite match them. They would find their groove with other producers. But it was not an album that I could really like listen to at the time,
not
besides
really.
The singles.
This is To the Death. I remember this now.
It's
yeah,
not
you
bad. Heard this one.
All right,
this kind of almost had like a Scarface sound.
Yeah, I give them this. I give them this one.
Yeah,
I give
this was my second favorite song. On the
I'll
album.
Give them a point for this.
So you didn't like care for this album back then. You're not crazy about it now. So were you even giving it 3 mics back then?
I was giving it 3 mics.
Now it's like 2.5.
Can you play FAG? FAG for the people out there. If you spell it out, it's the name of a song.
Fake ass gangster.
I remember this song.
Yeah.
Okay, this song I like.
It's not a total wash of an album like you're making it out to
I'm saying they're overrated. Okay. I'm just saying it's not. It's okay. I like this. This is good. I remember this song. Okay. What about Drama Lord? Play Drama Lord. What is I think that's the one it starts off. Drama Lord! Does it start like that? Oh, no.
No, I think you're thinking of another song that has that Drama Lord sample in there. Drama Lord, Drama Lord.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think of the song, too. I hear it in my head, too. But
you know, being that we're never going to talk about this album again, we might as well just, you know.
Can you guess what the source gave this album?
4.
Oh, there is a sample there.
Oh, this is it. Okay, Drama Lord. It's only fitting they use the sample Drama Lord
but
for the
like
song.
Another song used that same sample, right?
Probably. Was this 4 mics?
It was 3.5.
All right.
Give me 3.5
I buy into that. I'll agree. 3.5.
All right.
3.5.
No disrespect to MOP fans out there. We're not trying to shit
whoever
on
they are, I would like to find them.
They're East Coast.
What do you want to find them?
It's definitely East Coast fans.
But they deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. I'm going to say that at the bottom line. All right.
as far as great hip hop, greatest hip hop duos, they should be in the conversation. I mean, they're not going to make the top 10, but they're going to be in the top 20, maybe.
What kind of conversation are we having?
The duos, the hip-hop
I know, duos. But how is that going to go where MOP is going to be brought up in the conversation?
Their longevity.
When will that...
I think their longevity.
How long is this conversation going to be?
We're done whenever you're ready.
I mean, Jesus. Let's talk about MOP to start the greatest groups conversation.
Well, let's move on.
Yes, please.
And let's talk about... A guy that we mentioned during our crossover hits is the debut album Project Funk the World from Craig Mack. Released.
Yep. Well.
Released September 20th, 1994 on Bad Boy Records.
Groundbreaking.
A week after Ready to Die.
Right.
We mentioned that.
A week after it, very strange. Not many people know that.
And this was completed a year before Ready to Die.
Right.
Oh, not a year, but at least a while before Ready to Die.
Well,
Puffy shelved it and wanted Biggie's album to be the first one.
Right. For him to get shelved like that was big because he single-handedly helped bring New York back, was Craig Mack.
Dude,
this song.
I always say that Craig Mack does not get his respect that he's due for helping bring the East Coast to the fore, back in the conversation at least, because the West Coast just dominated the sound.
Right. Craig Mack, one of the so now we go from overrated to underrated. Craig Mack, very underrated.
Yeah.
Never had the backing that he should have.
No.
He had the machine backing him, but the machine didn't turn on. The engine didn't turn on. Puffy didn't turn it on.
There was constant rumors and actual... Puff was on record of saying that they would constantly be arguing over his image and the direction of the sound. Because Puffy was the guy that brought in Easy Mo B.
Right.
And Craig... was not really feeling it. He was not liking Easy Mo B's beats in the beginning, right? Like, we talked about Flavin Year was originally for freaking Apache.
Right. Thank goodness that didn't happen.
Yeah.
Sorry, Apache, I mean, quite frankly.
Right. But, you know, Craig at this time was 24. Puffy was 25. So they're real, like, ego-driven.
Of course.
Like,
yes.
Guys. And they would just... This album was very tumultuous as far as taking the direction of the music. That's why if you listen to this album, it seems like it's kind of uneven sound-wise going from track to track.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. This isn't a very good album.
We're going from, like, Judgment Day to, like, Making Moves with Puff.
When God Comes.
When God Comes, right?
Welcome to 94. This was not a good album.
But it was really Puff's, like, push for crossover. And with Bad Boy, it was all about crossover. And if you're not going to... conform to what Puff's kind of deal is, you're kind of be out.
You're
saw what happened with like guys like Shine and G-Dep. Well, they went to jail, but...
They went to jail. But convenient. Third Eye. If he was
Third
a bad
Eye,
boy.
Jesse West. That was Jesse West.
You know, so... He was at the top of his ego. He's young. What do you expect, right? So if you battle him, it's not going to go anywhere. And he had his image. He had his direction he wanted to take Bad Boy. And clearly a miscommunication at its finest.
Right.
In driving his career. And it's very unfortunate.
It is.
Because he had the second album. People kind of remember that was a Jock in My Style, right?
Jock in My Style. That was actually, he left and he was on some weird label and he was
on G Street or Island Records.
G Street, I think so, maybe.
Fourth and Broadway, G Street. They all conglomerated together. Island Records.
It was actually executive produced by Eric B. That was like his manager after.
Wow. So you know that your career is in the toilet when you got Eric B. When Eric B is your manager, that's a death warrant right there. So, it was very unfortunate, very very unfortunate. And rest in peace to Craig Mack. He did pass away not too long ago.
Yes.
So,
man, that was kind of shocking because we had no idea his health was in that.
We didn't know, and
bad of shape,
you know? Very unfortunate ending to his life, his career.
And for a guy that was like really like. Brought life back to East Coast hip hop in the 90s. It was.
He didn't get it just due. Very underrated.
Yeah.
He's top five most underrated.
I agree. The album felt rushed, and it's not a great album.
No.
But he's a way better rapper than people remember him to be.
I mean, look at this remix. This remix is the best song of not on the album.
Right. This is the Q-Tip remix for Get Down.
Well, right. It's an excellent remix, and he's not known for albums. He's known for his aura. He's known for what could have been.
Yeah.
Basically, he's the what could have been guy, which is very unfortunate to say.
I don't know if you remember this, but remember it take like years, like until like 02 for him and Puffy to finally make up. And Craig Mack was on the Special Delivery remix for GDEM,
which was great to see.
Yeah,
everybody was excited to see that.
And he was in the I Need a Girl music video.
That is correct.
And we're like, whoa, Max in a bad boy video.
That is correct. There was thought of, oh, he's back?
Right.
But no, nothing happened out of
that. Yeah, he passed away of heart failure in 2018. The album project from Funk the World would go gold, and it got 4 mics in the source.
How?
Wow.
Okay, here's a this is the show, The Bias of the Source Magazine, okay? And it was coming out. It was creeping out. Was there an influence by Mr. Combs on this album review? Was Sean Combs talking some stuff to them to be like, hey,
well,
how about you kind
of,
you know?
There's two, that's a good conversation because Bad Boy bought a ton of advertising in the source.
Yeah.
They had full page ads in the source. We do remember that. For those of you guys that were reading the source back then.
Can you drop us a 4 micer?
But the source is also an East Coast based magazine with a West Coast dominated sound going on in hip hop.
Correct.
So it's good to boost East Coast artists in kind of the culture's eye during
that
this
was
time
the
by giving
problem.
Them mic boosts.
That was the problem with the mic rating. It became political. It became
which will culminate with Almighty RSO.
Right. Can't wait to talk about that.
Fucking that up.
But it was a political thing to sell. I mean, when you look at reviews of things, what's really a non-biased review in magazines? Not anymore magazines, but online, consumer reports, all of that shit. You got to read between the lines with these album reviews, with these video game reviews, with these appliance reviews.
Right.
How are they getting this review and why is it the case? You look at that. You just summed it up. It's source, they're East Coast. He's giving them money for ads. They're trying to increase East Coast sales because they live there. And they're trying to balance out the whole pecking order of West Coast domination and East Coast domination.
It makes sense.
And plus, they can get away with it because Craig is a name. In 94, he was big. He had Flavor in Your Ear song. This album is like a 3-mic album. This is not a 4-mic album. This is clearly Suede. Clearly Suede.
It's a singles-driven album.
I mean, there's nobody... I tell you what, there's nobody listening to this album.
He held his own lyrically, especially on the remix. He held his own with Busta and Notorious B.I.G. and LL.
Of course, yes, he did, but not in his album.
Yeah.
This album was trash. It's borderline trash. There's no one listening to When God Comes, okay? There's nobody listening to Welcome to 94. Even if you're in 94, I got it, Craig. We're in 94. I mean, it's none of it was good.
Well, you can definitely say that our show is not biased because, you know, you definitely...
I ain't got time to play.
Mind. Yes.
All right. Buffy ain't giving me no cash, so I'm going to tell you, it's not a good album, and back then was a 3-mic album.
Right.
We fast forward to now, 2 mics. I give it 2-mic album.
Ooh, okay.
Maybe 1.5. It's not good.
I'll give it a 3-mic album back then. I'll give it maybe a 2.5 to 3-mic album now.
Based off his lyrics, though.
Just, yeah. Based on...
Exactly.
He has lyrical ability.
That's it.
And I really like the Easy Mo B beats, even though they get a little repetitious. I like the Easy Mo B production. Because he only does like 3 or 4 songs.
Well, what you do in the privacy of your own home is your own prerogative. But I'm just saying... His lyrics, okay. I give him 2 and 3 mics for the lyrics.
Okay.
I'm talking based off lyrics, not the album. 3 mics, Craig Mack.
Okay, all right.
Does he deserve to be in the Hall of Fame? I say yes.
Yeah.
I think it's just due that he belongs in the Hall of Fame.
For the singles alone, correct. And for what it did. For what
yes.
it did.
The magnitude of that single, he's got to be in there.
So we go from Craig Mack, another underrated East Coast rapper. We go to, I don't know, underrated question mark West Coast rapper.
Oh,
we
no.
go to Saphir.
Oh.
This is Boxcar Sessions, the debut All album right. from Saphir, the Saucy Nomad, released May 10th, 1994 on Quest Records. Yeah. See if anybody remember Quest Records? That was
where
Quincy
West Coast
Jones,
goes to
Quincy
die.
Jones label.
Yeah.
I think that's where hip-hop goes to die.
I think so.
I think Quest only had, like, Tevin Campbell. I think that was, like, their major... Shout out Tevin Campbell.
Here's the power rankings of knowing your career's about to die. Eric B. is your manager. You're on G Street Island, 4th and Broadway, Quest Records. You can
you know no
Easy Mobi does your
I
beats.
I got an even better worst label from the 90s. Ichiban Records, remember?
MC Breed, that's
yes.
right.
Ichiban Records.
Ichiban, well, Breed, you know, you held your own with that one, but we add them to the list.
But Let's talk about Reggie Gibson, a.k.a. Saphir, the debut
the saucy
from
nomad.
Oakland, the Oakland MC. This song is actually a big part of the show and the origins of your show. And
well, to some, because I have to revert back to, we did the dinner at Cocoa Head Cafe. Right. And we did a Who Dis. You did the Who Dis contest. We're supposed to guess the name of the artist of the song.
Right.
And this song was played, and the other person that was there, who's known as Cabot, has a brand. We make shirts.
A quite popular brand.
With this name, the name of the song here.
Right.
No one got it.
The irony. And no half one, the crowd's wearing light sleeper shirts.
And they're wearing light sleeper shirts. So people do not know this song. I don't know where they thought light sleepers came from. They didn't think it came from Saphir, but it came from Saphir. So,
now this album made really no impact besides hardcore hip hop heads.
This didn't make nothing of nothing. No.
And but Saphir had kind of a reputation with hip hop fans. I mean, people talked about him a lot.
We all dug it.
And I don't know if you remember his start, but he got his start as Tupac's roommate. And
right.
He was a backup dancer for Digital Underground, just like Tupac.
Right.
You know. And then he was actually featured on Raw Fusion's Live from the Stylotron album and Digital Underground's Body Hat Syndrome.
Yes, that is correct. Yes.
And he was another unsigned hype source.
He had the buzz. If you read magazines, the hip hop magazines, you'd see his name, you'd see his affiliation, and then he came out with Light Sleeper. And then Sam Goody had it.
Yep.
Bought it. It was interesting. It was different.
But even prior to Light Sleeper, he was in Menace to Society.
Yeah.
He was Cousin Harold, who gets shot in the famous carjacking scene.
That's all he got. That's all he had.
And he only got that role because Tupac, at one point, was one of the stars in Menace to Society. You remember this? And then when he got kicked off the movie, then he beat up one of the directors.
He beat up one of the directors. That's correct.
Yeah, so... but Saphir, like, with this album, you know, he basically said he wanted to make the most, like, obscure... like
the anti
non-commercial
right
album. I think he definitely achieved that. I mean,
he did.
Definitely not going for any type of commercial appeal with this album.
Nothing at all. It's strictly just for him to rhyme. No choruses that were substantial.
Right.
Nothing commercial about this at all. The very anti.
He
really.
Basically said he was there just to showcase lyrical ability. And he just knew that he just wanted other MCs to listen to this album.
Right. But I dug it because it was different.
He had a unique flow, for sure. He had that stop-go flow.
Yeah, I dug it. It's different. It's outside the box. And that was what we were looking for back then.
Right.
We wanted different. I dig this.
Yeah.
I like this album. It's better than Craig Mack's album. It's better than Artifact's album. It's better than MOP's album.
My only complaint with this album, way too many skits. There's 8 skits out of 19 tracks.
There lies a problem.
And with the Hobo Junction crew, right? That's why the album's called Boxcar Sessions.
Yeah.
But it was J Groove, Jay Z, Rationale, Big Nose, and Poke Martian. I always loved Poke Martian.
I forgot about that one.
Yeah, Poke Martian.
I dig it because it's so different, and it's a different style for the Bay. It's either you get it or you don't get it.
Right. Do you remember the album singles? There was Light Sleeper, there was Battle Drill.
Just Riding.
And then Just Riding.
Yeah.
And the biggest buzz of Saphir's career, actually, still to this day, came from the 1994 battle with Casual and Hieroglyphics.
I'm sure everybody...
that happened at the Wake Up Show.
Right, who's listening to this knows that battle. And it brought a lot of notoriety to both. And a lot of people said Saphir won. And, of course, that's always debatable, but a lot of people say Saphir won.
Yeah.
So, with that said...
I mean, the battle is so legendary, I actually mail-ordered a tape of the recording from Leopold Records in Berkeley.
Yes.
Because the mixtapes were circulating.
Right.
And the source actually printed out lyrics.
The lyrics
so
of the thing, right.
You could be the judge. You remember that?
Correct.
You could be the judge
yes.
of who won.
It was an amazing thing because we didn't have the internet. So, we're just reading these things and we're trying to get tapes of it. And it already happened like a month ago. And we're trying to find about it now. It's pretty amazing how we didn't have the internet and we had to figure this out.
Oh, yeah.
It was a monumental thing.
It was big. And it was only because Casual basically had Saphir rap on one of his songs on the on his debut album called That's Bullshit.
Yes.
And then Saphir asked to repay the favor, and it was supposed to be on one of the tracks for Boxcar Sessions, and Casual stood him up. And Casual, like, said that, oh, man, your ego's getting too big and whatever. And that was that's what stemmed it.
That's what led it. Okay.
But what was so cool was Saphir walking into the Sway and Tech show and, like, just him solo. No crew, nothing.
Right.
And battling Souls and Casual.
Right. That was pretty monumental.
Awesome, man. Right. I just thought the balls and just the tenacity of this guy, man.
Historic, like, historic moment that will live on. People still talk about it.
Yeah.
This album back then, I dug it a lot. It was fun. It was I gave it 4 mics.
Back then?
Back
what
then.
Do you, what do you give it now?
I give it now 4 mics still. It
really? Even with all those skits and all that shit?
If there was no skits in there, I would go 4.5.
Okay.
If we take the skits out, that the skits is a minus. Yes, definitely. Okay. The songs are so different, though.
And they are. They're
it's
really... So,
it's different in a good way.
Like, you can't play hardly any of these songs at a party.
If anybody has any audacity to want to play a Saphir song at a party, of any party, they need to question themselves. All right, let's talk about that person right. Playing press play. Okay, I'm talking to you too now. You, with your music playing everywhere you go. If you're playing Saphir at some party.
No, I have not attempted it yet.
Okay, good. Keep that streak going.
The only time I played it was when we play Who Dis and we play like
where it should be. That's the only place where it should be kept. But in
because he was like a if you know you know guy. He was kind of a way the other hip hop fans' knowledge of rap music based on like have you even heard of Saphir?
Right.
You know so.
Right. It's either you know or you don't.
It's either you know or you don't.
Right. I'm gonna stick with 4. I'm gonna because I know the skits are bad. The skits are really bad.
Yeah.
But if I had it only on tape, I would give it 3 mics. But thank goodness I have it on MP3 and Apple Music, so you can just press the
skip
button.
Skip everything, right.
Yes.
And then he actually planned a West Coast super group, right? Golden State Warriors.
Yeah.
They got sued behind the season desist from the
Shocker.
Golden State Warriors. Yeah. And they changed it to Golden State Project, and that was Saphir Raskas and Exhibit.
Right.
But it never came of anything. It was like the Four Horsemen on the East Coast, right? Like the corrupt Raskas. Raskas can't start a group, man. Like, everything Raskas is involved can't get it off the ground.
Raskas is like the Craig Mack of the West.
Grusko.
Doesn't really get it going.
But as of 2011, I don't know if a lot of people are aware, but Saphir was committed to a wheelchair due to years of spinal surgeries.
Yep.
He had a tumor on his spine.
Yeah.
And he had cartilage deterioration because of drug use.
Yeah.
And dehydration.
Yeah.
So he can no longer walk. So yo, shout out Saphir, man.
Shout out to that. Yeah, it's very tragic how that ended up becoming a thing.
And I could not find any source review on this. I think the album was so obscure.
There was
no source.
Yeah. I believe that. I definitely believe that.
All right. We got time for one last one.
Oh, wow. Really?
Do we? I'm asking you.
Technically, we have, I look at the timer.
All right. Let's.
We have 7 minutes
so
remaining.
We talked about an underrated East Coast MC. We talked about an underrated West Coast MC. We're going to talk about arguably one of maybe, is he overrated? Is he overhyped?
Oh, boy.
It's Method Man. The album is Tikal, which was one of the most hyped debut albums of 1994. It was released November 15th.
We got 7 minutes remaining, and you can do this? You do these kind of albums?
We got to end with something. We can't end with Saphir.
Let's end with the Artifacts or something. End with M.O.P. or something. All right.
The debut album from Clifford Smith, a.k.a. Johnny Blaze, a.k.a. Method Man, right? This was a commercial smash. Platinum album. Debuted number one Billboard Top 100 albums. Number one Billboard rap charts. That was huge for a rap album. Debuted top 10 pop charts.
Okay, this here we go. How about this? This is... I dug it. I dug this album when it came out. It was a good... sequel in a way to Wu-Tang, because this was the first Wu-Tang album that came out after Wu-Tang, so it was a solo album, of course, but it was like that's the sequel of one of the people. It fit the vibe. It got darker. I dug it. His other albums weren't,
but no, I mean, we can't even put this in the same conversation, Liquid Swords or Cuban Links.
Oh no, I'm not talking about that. Right, just as a Method Man album, as far as like a follow-up to Wu-Tang album, it was good. Of course, it got better with Raekwon and GZA and you know, but...
So, I want to ask you a question that I had this conversation with a lot of people when this album came out. When this album came out, did you... Were you disappointed? Because there were a lot of conversations that a lot of people thought it would be better. It's a good, solid album. But there was an argument of some people thought it might be better. Because he was so hyped at the time.
That's being a victim of overhype. Mm. That's a victim of overhype. People said the same thing with Wu-Tang Forever. Mm. That Wu-Tang Forever wasn't as good.
Right.
I thought Wu-Tang Forever was fine. I mean, you there's only so much you can hype something up.
Right.
You're living in your world of hypeness, and you got to watch out.
But he's definitely the most commercially successful Wu-Tang solo artist, right?
He had a good presence. He has a good voice. He has the look.
This is the biggest solo album, biggest sale of any Wu-Tang solo album.
This is the one
seller of all Wu-Tang solo projects.
Makes sense, because that was the one that came out right after, so everybody was all excited to buy it.
And it was a cultural... Bring the Pain was such a cultural song. It was embedded in the culture. Chris Rock named his special Bring the Pain after the song.
Legendary song, legendary video. Let's shout out the video to Bring the Pain. It was excellent.
Yeah, awesome video.
Excellent video. So you have all of that, and we're not even going to talk about All I Need to Get By with Mary J. Blige, which was the mega hit.
That wouldn't even come out until 95.
Right, and that was way after mega hit, and it was on the album, and it was a remix, but it was on the album.
And then they would re-release the album with the remix and get even more sales off of it.
So, I gotta give it a 4 back then.
Right.
I dug it.
In the pantheon of Wu-Tang MCs, where does Method Man rank for you? Top 3?
He's top 3. I think we have to say top 3.
Ray and Ghost in there? Or Jizza?
Ray, Ghost, Method Man. Okay. Jizza on the way, coming on the way out. I mean,
Ray,
looking
Ray
in.
Ray number 1? I think Ghost is mine.
Nah, you gotta go Ghostface number 1.
Yeah, Ghost is number 1.
Ghostface number 1, I go Method Man 2, Raekwon 3.
Wow. Okay.
Jizza 4. Because Method Man sounds fun. He's got
the killer voice.
He's got the voice, and it's the total package.
Right.
It's a total package. And he evolved into an actor. And then he evolved into hosting a game show. I mean, he's a multi-talented guy.
Yeah, the RZA production on this, it's a solid RZA. RZA did like 11 out of the 13 tracks.
And they were good.
And then Fourth Disciple did like Sub Crazy and PLO Style. And
those were good too. I dug it. 4 mics then, 4 mics now.
Wow, yeah.
I don't see what's the problem here.
I think for me, I think it was maybe for me, it was like overhype at the time. So I think,
probably.
I think I've actually liked this album more over time than I did when it first came out.
Okay, then I can see that.
So for me, it was like maybe 3.5 when it came out.
Oh.
And I'm like boosting it up to like a 4 now.
Okay.
Because in longevity, I can still listen to pretty much the full album and not be upset.
Well, you know? I like the way they evolved the sound from Protect Your Neck days to this. Because it got a lot darker and more twisted and more the kung fu and karate and all that.
They were almost positioning Method Man also as kind of a horrorcore image-looking artist.
Yeah, yeah.
He had the eye. He had the one, like,
they made
cloudy
it look
eye.
Dark. It was very dark.
Right. I agree with the dark image. Yeah, they definitely were building him up. And it's amazing the rebrand for Method Man over the years, right? Like,
well, it went from dark to not dark.
Right. He turned
comedy
into kind of like a pop. Yeah, with How High and with his
at that
with his
point,
duo group with Redman. He really completely switched up.
I checked out at that point. I was done with him.
But I think we're in agreement. Takal is solid album. It holds up even to today.
I agree.
RZA Productions, it's a great album. I don't know if it's not going to be held with the same regard maybe as... Cuban Links and Liquid Swords, but
that's
definitely
fine
in the conversation. I'd rather listen to this than the Bobby Digital album.
I think anybody would listen. I don't know anybody likes that Bobby Digital album.
Nick Hammond, friend of the show, Nick.
Oh
Hammond
God,
likes,
really?
Is
okay.
Loves the Bobby Digital album. He thinks it's one of the most underrated rap albums.
Well, you know what, Nick Hammond,
definitely not listening.
Which is very underrated on your behalf, Nick Hammond. So. Wow, we're gonna end with that.
Shout out Nick Hammond.
Shout out him being alive. That's all I want to know. If you're alive, Nick Hammond. If you're alive and you're listening to this, you message someone and say, I'm alive. That's how we'll know that you're listening to the show.
But, but Nick likes like Kool Keith and RZA, so he likes definitely obscure.
What happens when you
styles
live on a boat? But is that all we got here? Are we signing off on this dark episode of. Part one of three of four of two.
Just continuing on with debut albums. I can't believe there are so many debut albums that came out in 94.
You can't believe it.
Yeah.
I tell you something. I got something to say about that. All right, so that's it then. We got this was the official part one, which is actually part two.
Right.
Because part one did not record. I can't believe I'm just explaining this again.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
I'm sorry. The hell with it.
Again, we appreciate you guys tuning in to another 1994 Hip Hop Review. Hopefully, this brought back some memories. Once again, wonderful to get the insight from Aaron Sakai, man. This guy's a wealth of hip hop information.
Oh, God, really?
Well, I like it. And you, like I said, you call it like it is. I mean, you're one of the only hip hop shows, I'm sure, that we bring in on MOP, and you're like, MOP, who's really liking MOP, right?
I'm just going to call logic
like,
here.
We want people to listen to this, and what if MOP, they probably will never listen to this, but.
MOP ain't listening to this.
But,
if MOP were listening to this.
You give your honest opinion, which I appreciate.
Well, I thank you, and the wealth of information and knowledge that you bring to this, because you bring all the notes and notes on top of notes that I don't see anybody bringing, especially for something that is historic like 94.
Yep.
It needs to be addressed.
Well, we just wanted to archive it all.
It needs to be archived, right.
And it was also the conversation that we can have recorded, so we never talk about it again.
Damn right. You goddamn right we're not. And let me just make a statement to end out to MOP right now. If MOP,
Artifacts, you shit on both of them.
Okay, I want to say something specifically to MOP and Artifacts. If you ever listen to this in the history of time, all right, are you remembered by many? Yes. We're going to be remembering you. We're talking about you in this episode. So that means we remember you. Do you have your place in history? Do I believe that you're in deserving of the Hall of Fame? MOP, yeah. Artifacts, by a vote. But on top of that, you guys are historical groups. I think you could have done a lot better. I think your album could have been a lot better, Artifacts. MOP, I think you could have just had an album with DJ Premier, and then that would have taken you to the promised land. Good luck to all of you.
I think that's a great way to sign out. But thank you, guys. We'll see you for the next one.